Today on CSCK News, we're playing a condensed version of the Kitimat Chamber of Commerce All Candidates Forum. The candidates in the Skinnebuckley Valley riding are as follows: Taylor Bacharach, our incumbent NDP candidate; Adina Young for the Green Party; Rod Taylor, Christian Heritage Party; Jody Craven for the PPC; Claire Rette for the Conservative Party; and Lakwinder Judge is the Liberal Party candidate who did not attend the September 7th or 8th forum. The moderator of this forum was Tom Kelly from Terrace. The debate was mildly attended online, with the audience of viewers never reaching 100. I think it's worth saying that apathy is the killer of political discourse and involvement. A study in the Harvard Political Review states that, quote, democracy is at its best when the people's voices are heard and status quo attitudes toward local candidates reflect an area for improvement. People should pay more attention to our elections and take the time to learn about the stances of local candidates and propositions. As we can all likely agree, this country and our little piece of it here in Skinnebuckley Valley is fractured. People are rallying in parking lots, protesting healthcare mandates and workers, harassing young minimum wage workers, and then turning around to ask why they just don't want to work. We are in a time of crises, not just one crisis. And as my colleague Daniel Messick said to me on the phone last week, we forget that climate change is the cause of a lot of the issues at hand. I have a political opinion. You, the listener, also have a political opinion. So I urge you to listen carefully to these candidates as they are running to represent you on a federal level. Don't become apathetic, even if you feel beaten down. Go out and vote. Listen to what your candidates stand for. Read their letters and listen to local news covering the boring, nitty-gritty stuff. The 2021 federal election is September 20th. Visit elections.ca to find out how you can vote safely, whether it's by mail or in advance, by going to elections.ca. The following is the audio from the Kitimat Chamber of Commerce candidates debate held on Wednesday, September 8th. And this is CICK News.
So the question comes down to truth and reconciliation. Firstly, what does truth and reconciliation mean to you, if you're comfortable answering that? And secondly, how do you and your party plan to ensure that the truth is known to all Canadians and help us all move forward toward country, or help move our whole country towards reconciliation?
There's nothing more important than truth when it comes to integrity in our interactions with one another. Jesus said that he was the way, the truth, and the life. He said he came to bear witness of the truth. And, you know, the other thing, there's even a biblical reference to reconciliation. God says that we have a ministry of reconciliation, that is our role, our job, to work to have reconciliation between peoples who may be separated from each other, from family, from neighborhood people in the community, and even from God. So we have to start by bringing out the truth. There are things, lies, that have been covering up the truth, and they need to be removed. The truth needs to be made available to everybody about the situation that has taken place with the residential schools and about many other things that are hidden from our sight in these days.
Excellent. Thank you, Rod. So, Claire, excellent. Thank you.
No problem. So for me, truth and reconciliation means doing the hard work of tackling issues that will improve the lives of Indigenous people across this country. When we look at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, we can't just cherry pick recommendations out of there. We need to actually make sure that we do all of the recommendations. And that's what the Liberal government is doing right now. They're cherry picking. The recognition of Indigenous rights has been hard won after decades of struggle by First Nations, both in the courts and through treaty negotiations. And we need to be making more investments into our arts and culture initiatives and communities. We need to help end human trafficking rings that have abused Indigenous women and girls for decades. And we need to provide better mental health support to communities.
Thank you. And Taylor.
Thanks, Tom. Well, I agree that we shouldn't cherry pick from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission calls to action. The NDP is committed to implementing all of them. And it was disappointing to see the Conservative government in the last parliament vote against a very critical one. But I'll get back to the question, which is, what does truth and reconciliation mean? The first word is truth. We need to hear the truth that Indigenous people have been telling us for generations. The discoveries of unmarked burial sites really drove home the fact that so many people haven't listened to the stories carefully enough and accepted the difficult truth of what happened. The second piece is around reconciliation, and the word I like to use is justice, because a lot of Canada's relationship with Indigenous peoples since the beginning of our country has been profoundly unjust.
Excellent, thank you, Taylor. And Jody put his hand up on the side, so Jody.
Yes, thank you. Many injustices were committed in the past by the Canadian government towards the Indigenous people. We cannot rewrite the past, but only seek the best way to live together in the future. The relationship must be based on mutual respect and a balanced approach, taking into account the needs of the Indigenous population and the interests of the Canadian population. The Liberal government has been in power for about 150 years, 1861, and the residential schools started in 1870. The Liberal government did not do anything for the Indigenous people back then, and they will not do anything for them now. So in the House of Commons, it's about all talk. So we're about all about building relationships, reconciliations, and we can do this with each other. We got to sit down and talk one-on-one. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Jody. And finally, Adina.
Thank you. Truth and reconciliation to me is respect and reciprocity. It's diversity. It's recognition of the truth and acknowledging the truth. The Green Party are the only party who rejected the doctrine of discovery to respect Indigenous sovereignty. As an Indigenous woman running in a federal election, moving towards reconciliation is not coming in with a bias to being an Indigenous woman. It means coming in with open ears and an opportunity for us to be able to work collaboratively, to pull from each party what works and what doesn't work, to be able to be inclusive and to not let the party lines divide and conquer. It's to push the envelope as far as we can. It's to say this is what works and this is what doesn't work. And it's an opportunity for us to be able to work as closely together, even though we are running for different parties. I feel like it's a good opportunity. Thank you.
Okay, so our next question I will pose to Taylor, actually, is our federal debt is mounting and is reported to be over $1 trillion. What is your approach to dealing with this on a national level, and what could our region's role in this be?
Thanks, Tom. So two things. The first one is that the COVID response has cost money. The bills for COVID relief that came forward in the House of Commons were supported by all four parties. And I think it's something as a country that we can be proud of, that in a time of crisis, all of the political parties came together in the best interest of Canadians, of Canadian businesses, of the people who are struggling through a difficult time. The second piece of the answer is around what we do long term about our budgets. There are corporations in Canada that are making billions of dollars and paying very little tax. 1% of our population holds 26% of the wealth. We need to rebalance things so that everyone is paying their fair share, and that's the commitment the NDP has made.
Thank you. And now, similar question, and I will put this one to Jody, and that is personal debt is at one of its highest points in Canadian history. What steps would your party take to try and improve this growing problem?
Well, thank you for the question. Personal debt. First, we got to open up the economy. Under the NDP government, the Liberal government, they're like a tag team partners there. Over 250,000 businesses went bankrupt and closed for good in Canada. 21,000 alone in BC. Personal debt, we got to get everyone back to work. Thanks, Michelle. And we've got to stop relying on the government. Christy Freeland, she announced that they'll be coming after our savings account, and Justin Trudeau made an announcement that he's ready for the Great Reset. So we don't want to buy into any of this government stuff. We want our Canadian dollar to be strong, and we have to put the people back to work.
And on a slightly different direction, Adina, this question for you, especially with your location. One thing we have learned during the pandemic is the importance of connectivity in rural BC. How is your party going to facilitate a secure digitalization of small and medium-sized business in northwestern BC?
Thank you. I think for this answer, I'd have to say I'll do some exploration and to see, I will have to ask and see what are some of the issues and where does the government stand with things as it is right now. And to be able to advocate and share with the government what it is that works and what it is that doesn't work for the businesses within our riding.
This question is to Claire, and it will be climate change and housing affordability are two issues British Columbians care about the most right now, according to a recent survey. If elected, how will you expand and enhance voluntary energy efficiency initiatives to meet the goals of reducing greenhouse gas emissions and supporting a post-pandemic economy recovery?
Sorry, I forgot to unmute myself. Thank you for the question. The Conservatives have a plan that meets our targets and reduce emissions, and they do it even while repealing Justin Trudeau's carbon tax. Independent analysis found that our plan would effectively achieve the same emissions reductions as the government's current plan in 2030, while still resulting in a boost to jobs and the economy. We can protect the environment without doing it on the backs of hardworking Canadians and without hurting our economy. And instead of sending your money to Ottawa, low carbon savings accounts help Canadians make greener lifestyle choices while letting them decide what works best for them and their families. If you're interested in learning more about that, it's in our platform, and I would encourage you to reach out to me because obviously there's a lot more information on it than just that. But we'd be working with the provinces to implement them, and it'll incentivize Canadians to make greener lifestyle choices that can reduce their emissions while also allowing them to decide what works best for them and their family.
Rod, for you, would you support a thorough review of Canada's taxation structure with a goal of making it easier to understand and more efficient? And what would that look like?
Well, that's a great question, because we have a plan to completely throw out the income tax. We would do this over time, not all of a sudden, but we would replace it with a fair tax for everyone on products, but with no income tax. Can you imagine? You get your paycheck, you take it home, there's nothing taken off, and you have all that money that you can spend on the things you want and need. If you're wealthy and you can buy an expensive automobile, you're going to pay a lot more tax. If you are buying an old beater to get around in the winter and you don't have any extra cash, then you're going to pay very little tax. So we think it's unfair and unjust to take away the income that people work so hard for. And the way the income tax is now, progressively, the harder you work, the more they take. And that's just not right. So we would have the fair tax replace the income tax.
Okay, so this question I'm going to put to all candidates again. I will start with Jody this time. And that is going to be, how do you and your party foresee accelerating the economy as we come out of COVID?
How we're going to accelerate the economy, right? We're just going to open everything up, right? Do something like Denmark, right? Just open things up. We got to get, I think is what is the number, 75% of all taxes is from small businesses. We got to get the small businesses back on track. We got to get Canada back on track. We got to get all the natural resources, you know, get them going again. But we got to live with this COVID, right? And we just can't keep on shutting down and locking up the country, right? That's, you know, there's putting so much stress on the regular family, and people are losing their jobs, and there should be no mandates on the employees, right? You got to get this, you got to get done. That's totally legal. That's a criminal offense. And the employer should realize that. And we have lawyers set up for that too. Thank you.
Thank you, Jody. Claire, next, with the same question. How do you and your party foresee accelerating the economy as we come out of COVID?
Sure, thank you. So I think one of the biggest things is that we need to see more investment into small business and entrepreneurialism in this country. It's something that is certainly dwindling right now, and our platform has a lot of commitments into encouraging and developing small business. Another thing is that over the last 6 years, billions of dollars of investment have left Canada. We deserve a government that's going to fight for our interests, and our Conservative government will make increasing energy export opportunities a diplomatic priority in our dealings with the US government. Investors are going to continue to stay away without a predictable and consistent impact assessment process, and we're committed to fixing it, basing our changes on the bipartisan recommendations made by the Senate Committee on Energy, Environment, and Natural Resources. We need an assessment process that upholds best-in-class environmental standards and sets clear expectations and timelines for environmental reviews so that investors have the confidence and certainty that they need.
Thank you. And same question, Adina.
Thank you. I think accelerating the economy, I believe, is really going to we have to see how things work with COVID, the amount of people who are deciding to get the vaccine and not get the vaccine. We need to do it in a safe way. And there needs to be opportunities for like Claire was saying, small businesses and entrepreneurship in small communities, and for the government to be able to find the statistics and look at the information that was gathered over the time of the, you know, since the pandemic started, to see what those businesses need and to see how COVID has affected the life of people every day, and taking it step by step on what it looks like for things to move faster. We can take a step and we might stagger a little, but we need to take the first step and really start looking to the people to see what is going to work.
And Rod.
Yes, the first thing we would do is eliminate the carbon tax. The carbon tax raises the cost of everything that you buy. That includes building supplies, that includes supplies for businesses and manufacturers. We would also cut red tape. You know, the growth seems like when the government is prone to growth, you have to always use self-restraint to keep the government from growing past its usefulness. You know, sometimes permits and regulations are long past their usefulness. The government, Canada has to get back on track of energy independence. We have natural resources in this country. You know, oil sands are just one of them, but there's no reason that Canada should be purchasing oil and other energy products from overseas, from conflict zones, and that would put a lot of people back to work. We need a secure food supply. We need to invest more in, and I don't mean the taxpayer dollars going to the farmers, but we need to have more attention on agriculture in this country.
Thank you, Rob. And finally, Taylor.
Well, at this juncture in the fourth wave of the pandemic, the best economic strategy is a health strategy. We need to get everyone vaccinated, and we need to end this pandemic so that we can get back to normal without further shutdowns like we've experienced in the past that did have tremendous economic impacts throughout our province and our country. Now, beyond that, when it comes to stimulating the economy in the recovery, we need to do a number of things at once. We can't simply restart and invest in the old economy. It's like pumping up a bike tire that's got a flat without patching the hole. We need to invest in the renewable energy economy and the clean energy future, and we need to invest in innovation if we're going to position ourselves as a country for the next 20 or 30 years.
How will your party promote reconciliation with the Indigenous population in the Skeena Bulkley Valley? Particularly.
Thanks for the question. I think that I did touch on some of it earlier, but I'll just kind of reiterate because it's important to hear. I think that one of the biggest things that we can do is investing in more arts and cultures initiatives, providing more economic opportunities and supporting education for Indigenous people. Obviously, when we look at projects that are successful and help both First Nations and our economy, Indigenous-led partnerships into industry have been extremely effective. Looking at projects like Cedar LNG and the Sealisms LNG project, which I'm very supportive of, it creates a really good example for how we can work with First Nations as government to encourage that development within their communities. And I think that we need to do more to work on, like I said earlier, ending human trafficking rings. We've called for a swift timeline and funding on the calls to action 71 to 76 involving missing children to provide healing for families, because we need to acknowledge the deep sorrow and mourning that all Indigenous people and survivors of residential schools are experiencing.
Thank you. And Adina, you have your hand up. Is that a rebuttal?
Yes.
Excellent.
Thank you, Claire, for your response. My question is, how is the Conservative Party going to implement reconciliation with the history of what's gone on in the Wet'suwet'en territory?
Thank you for the question. I think that when it comes to looking at things like pipelines and just in general, any kind of industry through First Nations territories, like I said, the biggest thing is that they need to be partners, and it has to be something that has social license. So it involves doing the hard work as a representative, going into the communities and ensuring that there is that social license. And if there isn't, finding out why and finding solutions that'll work for most people. You're never going to make everyone happy, but you know, if I was to be the member of parliament, then it is not in any way my right or prerogative to enforce my views and what I want on the constituents. I need to work with them. I need to be involved in the communities. And at the same time, you need to take an approach of not going in biased and having your mind made up one way or another, which unfortunately I think is something that we've seen a lot of problems with previous representation that we've had. They've determined how they think First Nations are going to feel about a project before they've actually gone in and done the hard work of consulting with them. And I've heard that time and time again when I've been dealing with many of the First Nations communities throughout this region, as I'm trying to start building those partnerships and those relationships.
For sure. Well, if I could, Tom, yesterday in Terrace, my Conservative friend mentioned a motion that the Conservative Party brought forward, claiming that the majority of the Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs and the vast majority of the Wet'suwet'en people supported a certain pipeline. I'm wondering how she came to that conclusion, how her party came to that conclusion, because I live on Wet'suwet'en territory and I know a lot of Wet'suwet'en people, and I didn't think that that really characterized reality, and that's why I voted against it. I think the community has a variety of perspectives and at times can be quite divided, and I do agree that we need to be respectful, but if she could clarify, that would be helpful.
Sorry, could I just quickly confirm? This doesn't mean that I've used up my two rebuttals.
You haven't used your rebuttals at all. No, these are so Adina's responding. And Taylor's rebuttals.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, no, absolutely. I think that it is really important to recognize that in throughout our communities, there is a lot of division when it comes to these projects. Obviously, it's no mystery to anybody that I am in favor of industry and development as long as it's done in a safe way. I worked a lot on getting the approvals for LNG Canada when I was a city councillor in Kitimat. So, but at the end of the day, like I said, it is not my place to push my feelings on other people. I believe that there is a lot of division within the Wet'suwet'en on that specific project. But the conversations that I have had have been primarily positive, and many of them feel that their concerns were not heard by government. And I've heard from many. So that's, you know, I'm not in that place yet where it's my role, but that has been my understanding, is that there were plenty of Wet'suwet'en people that felt like they were not being listened to and not being heard, and they are in favor of that project.
Oh, actually, I'll put this one to you. Where am I? Yeah, I'll put this one to you, Rod. Even before the pandemic, BC businesses were experiencing labor shortages. How will your government increase immigration to BC?
That proposes that national
immigration is also considered immigration. So that could be people coming from Alberta or, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, right now, with COVID, a lot of businesses are having a hard time finding someone to come to work because people are making as much money on these government handouts as they would be working. And so that's where, you know, Mr. Bachrach's assumption that the government had to do these bailouts. If the government hadn't shut down all these businesses, they wouldn't have had to. We wouldn't be shelling out all this money, because I don't believe that all those businesses had to be shut down. But as far as raising up people to do the work, you know, young people are ready to go. They need jobs, and they need jobs not only for financial security, but it's a beginning of a career. For many, many young people, their first job, whether it's at Tim Hortons or McDonald's, it's the beginning of a life of work. And work is enjoyable. Work is not something that we should avoid. Work is something that is a pleasure to have. And yeah, I guess that's my time. Sorry.
Thank you. So my next question I will put to Jody. And that is, clean drinking water, an essential to key life, but it is still not available to all Indigenous communities within our country. How would your party prioritize and work to solve this issue?
What a great question. And thanks for picking on me again, Tom. I just don't understand this. This is criminal. You got these parties in Parliament, you know, they've been promising clean drinking water all this time, but they hand out millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to foreign countries to build highways, or $70 million for abortions in Africa. How about our people? How about providing for fresh water for our people? Never mind these little committees, right? Go get it done. Hire construction, get it done. No more. They had what, 6-10 years to do this stuff? Hey, get fresh drinking waters to all communities, to all Canadians.
Excellent. Okay, thank you, Jody. So I will put this next question to Adina. And you touched on some of this, I believe, earlier. But across Canada, communities are experiencing a mental health and addiction crisis that is impacting downtown cores. And the companies conducting and any of the companies conducting business there. How will your government work with provinces and municipalities to address the societal challenges that communities face?
Mental health and addictions is a really multifaceted thing. And I think a lot of the stuff that we do with mental health and addictions is really a multifaceted approach. One of the HIDA laws that we follow is everything depends on everything else. And with the amount of people who are suffering from mental health issues or are coping with mental health issues are really the ones that are the ones that, you know, we can get the information from on what it is that needs to happen for us and for them. And with the addictions and substance use or abuse, we need to create places and create safe injection sites. And, you know, it could be in many different forms on how we deal with the addictions and the opioids that people use, because there are everyday people who are using alone and not in a safe place where people can find them. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Adina.
Can I comment on that?
You can make a rebuttal.
Well, I'll use one of my rebuttals, but it's a statement, not a rebuttal.
Technically, it falls. Yeah. And we're closing to the end of the question, so that's okay.
Okay. I like to add on to this addiction. I know I was one of the candidates that went down to Hastings Street. I went down to Ground Zero. I talked to all these people that need care, and our country's failing them. Now they have a program called Clean Drugs. So they're not getting our people off drugs. They're promoting drugs. So I talked to all these people down in Hastings Street, and one of them came up with a brilliant idea. And they said, why don't we have our sort of like our own community? So the community, how it works, you get all the students from the college, university, who's taking doctoring, psychology, nursing, the whole nine yards, and you create wings, and that's how they do their practicum. So we're getting the people the help they need, and then in the meantime, we're opening up all the business streets down in the city, so we'll be making money instead of keeping these people down on the street. Get them off the street. It's our duties as Canadians to help these people instead of keeping them down. Never mind these free injection sites. Get them off the street. Get them help.
And the next question I will pose to Taylor. And that is, while the industrial projects that we've seen in our region have brought prosperity to many in many of the northern BC communities, there are still many downtown businesses that have not enjoyed this the same level of success. What funding or other initiatives would you foster to revitalize the main streets of our northwestern BC?
Thanks for the question, Tom. It's a good one. We're the only party that has committed to making the doubling of what was formerly called the gas tax revenue that goes to local governments, making that permanent so that municipalities, local governments have a fairly unrestricted source of funding to tackle the infrastructure issues, things like downtown beautification, things like water and sewer projects. This is something that's strongly supported by the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, and I'm really proud that Jagmeet Singh and the NDP are the only party that have committed to that permanent doubling. We do need to make sure that these big industrial projects have lasting benefits and a permanent legacy in our region. And that's for all of us. That's all of our responsibility to take that on and to push for better.
So we are coming down towards the end of our questions. I will try to make sure I keep this even. So far as my count, I've posed four questions to each of you. Two of those were questions to the entire group. Yeah, we'll go with the good old hardball, which we might actually put to more people if they'd like to. And that's going to be, what would your party steps to be today to deal with the ongoing COVID pandemic?
Well, we would end the useless government edicts. Certainly, we would say absolutely no to the vaccine passport. Anything that discriminates between Canadians who are free to make their own medical decisions. We think it's just terrible that a government would impose or coerce or bully, or recently in these appearances during the campaign, Mr. Trudeau has been disparaging, making very demeaning remarks about Canadians who, for their own reasons, choose not to get the vaccine. We're tremendously concerned about the vaccine, whether it is useful, whether it's safe. There are lots of cases of people suffering harm from it, adverse events, including deaths. But regardless, we think every Canadian has the right to make that choice on their own. They should not be coerced into doing it. We would allow businesses to put people back to work. We would end the survey. People need to get off the couch and get back to work. That's going to solve our economic issues if businesses are allowed to operate the way they're supposed to. Thanks.
So now a question around housing. I will pose this one to Adina. So this is a longer question, so bear with me here. Two-thirds of Canadians who don't own a home have stated they would like to someday, but most believe it's become harder to buy a home within the past year. A national housing roundtable would be an opportunity to encourage research and innovation to planning and building, as well as make energy efficient improvements to homes. If you are elected, how will you help promote the establishment of a permanent national housing roundtable with all levels of government, builders, real estate professionals, and civil society organizations?
Big question. I am part of the ones who do not own a home. Some of the barriers that I've had are not having access to being able to get a mortgage. Some of it had to do with living on reserve and also being a barrier on accessing funding to get a mortgage for homes. Sometimes the band structure, depending on where they are at, need help. I feel like as an as an Indigenous woman and in recognition of, you know, the history of Canada, I feel like the oppression has been such a big thing, and living on reserve is such an oppression, and having the unceded territories of where our nation used to, you know, well, we still do reside, but being allotted a small piece of land, I think truth and reconciliation is definitely going to play a big part in how we move forward and having those dialogues with municipalities and other governance. Thank you.
Rod, availability of both social and market housing is a significant concern in the northern cities. Within all the industrial dependent economies, what financial or regulatory levels would you recommend that the federal government employ to mitigate pricing excesses or lack of supply in the real estate market of the small to medium-sized cities?
Well, you know, again, these COVID lockdowns, I hate to bring this up again, but supply chains all around the world of building supplies, food and other, you know, equipment and whatever have been cut short or, you know, stifled because of these COVID lockdowns. It's completely unnecessary COVID lockdowns that we're paying for now and will be paying for in the future. You know, they say about 130 million people around the world will starve because of the COVID lockdowns and the damage to the supply chains. Those are people in other countries, most of them, not in our country, but we should be concerned about people dying of starvation because of our foolishness in how we've handled the COVID situation. By the way, on COVID, one more thing is the government should be promoting ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, vitamin C, vitamin D, and zinc. And many people who have died would not have died. And
okay, without medical evidence, we got to be careful what we put forward. Thank you. Yeah. those are controversy still. So yeah, we will. You know, we are not doctors in this room.
Be careful what it puts forward because they don't have the medical evidence as well.
Okay. Now I will move on for Taylor. The NDP has put a strong housing. Affordable housing program, and have committed to, I believe, building 500,000 units of affordable housing within the next 10 years. How much of this intended housing will be focused on first-time home buyers and non-rental housing?
Housing is a huge issue here in the Northwest. I was talking just the other day to a construction worker in Terrace. He's working full-time. He's got a growing family. He's paying $2,500 a month for a three-bedroom townhouse. People are struggling. People who are working are struggling. And of course, we have people who face multiple barriers that are struggling to find supportive housing and options that work for them. We need housing solutions all across the housing spectrum, from the most desperate situations, most vulnerable people and the hardest to house, to people who are working full time. Our commitment is to help renters, is to deal with foreign speculation, and to build 500,000 affordable homes across the spectrum.
Excellent. Thank you. And Claire, another housing question, actually. So more support is needed for young and new potential first-time homebuyers. Would you consider reintroducing the 30-year amortization for insured mortgages to make monthly payments more manageable? Or what other mortgage recommendations could be made to help people get into the housing market from your party stance?
Thank you for the question. I do think that mortgages need to be more affordable. And one of the biggest issues that we face right now is that the mortgage stress test needs to be fixed. I think that we should be encouraging a new market in 7 to 10 year mortgages. It'll provide stability both for first-time home buyers and lenders, and open another secure path to home ownership for Canadians, reducing the need for those mortgage stress tests. Another thing is we need to remove the requirement to conduct a stress test when a homeowner renews a mortgage with another lender, instead of only when staying with their current lender, as is the case today. It'll increase competition and help homeowners access more affordable options, increase the limit on eligibility for mortgage insurance, and index it to home price inflation, allowing those in high-priced real estate markets with less than a 20% down payment an actual opportunity at home ownership.
So that is the majority of my questions for this evening. I can put one more to the group if you guys would like, and you can each go through it. And that one is going to be on transparency of government. What steps and things would you like to see to ensure that we are promoting transparency of government on the federal level? Rod, you've got a little smile there. I'll let you run with that one.
Well, it's, it's transparent to all of us who are not in government right at the moment that the Liberals have been shoveling a lot of things under the carpet. From the scandals that Mr. Trudeau has had with funding, the funding of his big business partners in the East, there's lots of things that are being hidden. But this most concerning one is around COVID right now, because they are hiding research or censoring research that is coming from renowned international immunologists, virologists, and doctors. And the federal government not only is refusing to listen to it, but they're refusing to allow the public to even know what's going on. So the transparency needs to begin in the age of COVID. Right now, with the next government, needs to be more transparent and share the information. We talked about truth and reconciliation. We need truth and reconciliation on COVID as well.
Okay, thank you. Claire, what would your government do to promote transparency going forward?
I think that one of the biggest things when it comes to transparency with government, and the reason it's an issue right now, is actually because when we look at the Liberals' track record, it has been so poor when it comes to the amount of scandals and ethics violations that have occurred in government. And I think we need to secure accountability and put our country first. We need to enact tougher accountability and transparency laws. We need to toughen the Conflict of Interest Act and impose higher penalties, toughen the Lobbying Act and abuse by Liberal insiders. And we need to increase transparency to end Liberal cover-ups. Canadians want answers to these things, and they deserve them. And a Conservative government will ensure that that happens.
Okay, thank you. And Adina.
I think transparency goes hand in hand with accountability. I think it also goes hand in hand with systemic changes. The systems that we have in place right now are, they've worked for this long, but the status quo needs to change. When we're holding ourselves accountable, we're able to, be transparent on the changes that we're making and the conversations that we're having. And I just want to share quickly systemic changes and how transparency and accountability can go just from a small, at the ground level in 2017, when the federal government were going to make potential changes to the Pilotage Act. Consultation processes were happening, and I was part of that process. And the chair said, "Thank you for your time," basically after a day and a half of consultation. And I said, "You are accountable to your minister. I'm accountable to my community. I'm going to go home and do a travel report, and I'm going to say, this is what I brought forward, and that's it. I just have to cross my fingers and hope that my concerns are brought forward." He then ended up being able to get us together to show that our concerns were implemented in his report and recommendations. So being able to hold ourselves accountable and be transparent that way is just a small example.
Thank you. Taylor.
Transparency is very important, and I wish that the Liberal candidate in this riding was at tonight's debate so that we could ask her questions about her government's terrible record on transparency. Time and time again in the last Parliament ordered documents from the government, and Parliament has unlimited powers to order documents from the government. It's a very important part of our democracy. And we saw the Liberal government delay and filibuster again and again at committee to avoid releasing documents. It's at the point right now where the Speaker of the House is in court trying to protect the honor of Parliament and those unlimited powers to order documents. And I think something needs to change, first of all, to remove the role of the filibuster in preventing committees from ordering documents. And secondly, in ensuring that government respects those powers of Parliament and gets Canadians the answers they need.
Thank you, Taylor. And Clara, a rebuttal.
Thank you. I completely agree with what Mr. Bachrach just said. I think that the Liberal government's their track record has been absolutely atrocious. And I appreciate hearing that he feels the same way, but I do have a question for him then. I would like to know why he has been propping up that Liberal government. And again, I made a comment in the debate last night that I was told was untrue. I believe somebody went on Facebook today and posted a link to a video of the NDP leader stating the exact same thing, that they are committed to making sure that a Conservative government would not go forward. They would work with the Liberal government and prop them up to ensure that we didn't see a Conservative government. And I understand that we have differing, very differing positions on things and views, but at this point, I think we can all agree that the Liberal government is bad for this country. So why would you prop them up? And why would your leader make those comments when we could have a change in government and we could get rid of the Liberals?
So I'm proud of my record in Parliament. People in Skeena-Buckley Valley sent me there not to throw out the government. They sent me there to get things done. And in particular, during a public health crisis like this country has never seen before, we pushed the government hard on so many things. We fought for the wage subsidy program that kept businesses' doors open. We fought for support for people with disabilities and seniors and people who'd lost their incomes. We got better programs. We got help for Canadians. And I'm really proud of the role that the NDP played in that. We also pushed for accountability. In fact, it was the NDP, my colleague Charlie Angus, who wrote to the ethics commissioner about the We Charity scandal. He was the one who pushed for an investigation. So Canadians expect us to go to Parliament and to work on their behalf for the best interest of the country. And I think that's very much what we did.
And Rod, you have risen your hand again.
Yeah, now just to respond to a couple of things that Mr. Bachrach said. First of all, this is not an unprecedented crisis, a health crisis we've never seen before. The Spanish flu of 1918 was much, much worse. And Canada fought a world war while they were dealing with that pandemic, and they didn't shut down businesses. So that's a bit of a stretch to say that. I do respect the work of any MP, whether they're NDP, Conservative, Green, or Bloc, who are challenging this non-transparent government and calling for Mr. Trudeau and his cabinet to do the right thing. So, wherever a member of Parliament has stood up and called for that, I thank them for doing so. And we will try to work, if I'm elected or even if not elected, we will work with those MPs, every MP that's willing to work with us to accomplish something good. We do appreciate the good things. We don't always get to say that as much as talking about the things we are disagree about, but we do appreciate the work of the MPs. And when they do the right thing, we will give a hearty cheer. When they do the wrong thing, we'll hold them to account.
Okay, thank you. And Jody, I haven't forgot about you. So finally, I pose the question. And that is, what would your party do towards improving transparency going forward?
Well, first of all, Canada should be thankful that they have a Conservative MP called Pierre Pavillon. Hope I pronouncing his name right. Thank you, Rod. He was Canada's soldier, putting Trudeau in place. Everything should be transparent. What these politicians are forgetting is they work for us, right? Everything should be transparent. So that leads me to the next thing, is the SNC-Lavalin scandal and the We scandal. I want to say something. Jatmeet Singh sided with the Liberals, said, oh, I see nothing wrong with that. With our government, we're going to be opening up all these books if we become a major party. And there's going to be, everything's going to be open book and transparent, right? Nothing to hide. Thank God for Pierre.
Okay, thank you. And finally, into closing statements from our federal candidates. And as we said, that is reverse order from earlier. So Adina, you get the stage for your 2.5 minute closing statements. And thank you all for respecting this time. No more rebuttals at this point in time. Closing statements. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, so much for your time and your commitment, and the best of luck to all the candidates who are on the campaign trail. I hope that all the candidates, the right candidate who is elected, is held in high regard and with great dignity. I respect each and every one of you, and thank you to the moderators and to the people who are able to have this debate virtually. I would like to remind people that the Green Party are a party who do not have backroom votes. There's no whipped votes. If there's something that doesn't work for us in the Skeena-Bulkley Valley riding, I have that opportunity to amplify your voices in the House of Commons without being disciplined or being turned around and walking in a different direction. I do want to say and open admittedly that there are biases that I would walk into this campaign with, because the Green Party do stand up against pipeline development and expansion. So that is a bias that I'm coming in with. However, there are a lot of things that we would like to work collaboratively with, such as a just transition, and to be able to identify the hierarchy, not the hierarchy, but the hereditary chiefs and the cultural identities that we have within Indigenous communities. The Skeena-Bulkley Valley are 1/3 Indigenous population. And as an Indigenous woman running in the Green Party, I come in with a lot of respect. I come in with a lot of dignity. I come in with a lot of views. It sounds like I would come in as a vengeful Indigenous person. That is the passion that I have. That is the feelings that I feel every day in my life being an Indigenous woman. I apologize, I'm going to get emotional for a second. I hear the voices of my mom and our ancestors with the history of Indian residential schools. My mom is dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, and I was awake with her at 2 o'clock in the morning because she's fighting depression and mental health struggles. So when I come in and I speak strongly about stopping industry and the development of pipelines, it's my cultural identity. It is the salmon, it is the cedar, it is the water, it is the air that helped pull me out of my mental health struggles. So that's where I come from. When something comes up strongly, I will dig deep. I will look at the legislations that are in place, and I will hold on tight to your stories and what you have to share with me to ensure that we have the time and the space to deal with things collaboratively. Thank you.
Thank you, Adina. And so next will be Rod Taylor.
Thank you, Tom. There's nothing so evil as a government that oppresses you, takes your money, takes your freedom, and claims to be doing it for your own good. The current government of Canada has violated every boundary of appropriate behavior. They have been supported in some of their activities by their fellow socialists in the NDP. When they weaponized their confused gender policies by attempting to criminalize parents and pastors for offering traditional perspectives to those seeking to escape a lifestyle they no longer want, the NDP and Erin O'Toole were right there with them. None of the big three parties have a plan to get back to balanced budgets anytime soon, but this joyride on our grandchildren's taxes must come to an end. It will come to an end. Today, with over $1 trillion in debt, Canadian taxpayers are paying out about $70 million in interest every single day. Interest rates will go up. That's more bad news. Along with inflation, carbon taxes have already raised the cost of every single item you purchase. The NDP supports those liberal carbon taxes, and Mr. O'Toole will introduce his own carbon tax. The Christian Heritage Party will end the federal carbon tax, protect your private property, including firearms, introduce balanced budget legislation, reduce red tape for businesses, promote a stronger national defense, and fulfill the long overdue obligation we have to our veterans and their families. We support the family farm, and we recognize the importance of food security and energy independence. We will seek the resolution of outstanding issues arising from the unjust policies of the past that have harmed generations of Indigenous peoples. I had the privilege of working for 9 years at WITSET, Morristown, and it was some of the best 9 years of my life, building reconciliation, building relationship. We will roll back the coercive, manipulative, useless, and harmful federal response to COVID. We will block efforts to impose a national vaccine passport, and we will defend the right of Canadian citizens to make their own medical decisions, to travel freely within Canada, to assemble indoors or outdoors without fear of persecution, and to publicly express their opinions on all things. I'm Rod Taylor, National Leader of CHP Canada. Check us out at chp.ca. I'm ready to serve you, and I'm asking for your vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Rod. Next is Taylor.
Thank you. I want to start by recognizing you, Adina, and thanking you for sharing those words from your heart. I want you to know I see you. Jagmeet has a saying. He says, "When we lift each other up, we all rise." I've been thinking about that a lot lately during these times we're living in. We have some important choices to make together here in this region. And in my heart, I believe in the people of the Northwest and the people of Canada. I think we can achieve incredible things together. My friend Gerald Amos, his grandmother once told him that we all have rights, but the greatest right that we have is the right to be responsible. I feel it's my responsibility as a leader in this region to share with you that COVID is real, that the public health measures are based on the best available science, and to encourage you, if you're eligible for vaccination, to go and get vaccinated. It's something that we can do together to keep each other safe. I think it reflects the best of who we are as a people, the best of our communities. I'm so honored to represent this place and to bring your voice to Ottawa and to fight for you every single day. I want to thank again the organizers for tonight's conversation. It's been a good debate. I want to thank the Chambers of Commerce for their work defending and standing up for small businesses and people throughout the Northwest. It's been an honor to work with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Taylor. And Claire.
Thank you all for taking the time to get involved and watching the debate tonight. And thank you to the Chambers of Commerce. We're on the precipice of what many would regard as the most important election in many of our lifetimes. And I hope that tonight was an opportunity for you to find out more about the people that are running to be your next federal representative. It's not an easy thing to put yourself on a public stage and ask for thousands of people's trust. And in the spirit of that, I'd like to thank all of my opponents for stepping forward to represent us. Even if we disagree on many things, I know the hard work and sacrifice that is required. And although it can be tough, it is very worthwhile. I hope that you at home can see the choice that you have in front of you because it's a simple one. Are you prepared for another 6 years of deficits and deceit from your government? Or are you ready for better? A fresh start for Skeena Bulkley Valley and for Canada. A government that will put Canadians first with a plan to recover, a plan to tackle the opioid crisis and secure better mental health and addiction services, housing, long-term care, reconciliation, and recovery for small business, among many other important things. Again, I hope I can count on your support, but most of all, I truly hope that you get out and vote on September 20th. Thank you.
And Jody.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank everybody involved this tonight. You know, it's a privilege going last. So I want to clear up some things. I forgot to add, if we could have 840,000 kilometers of pipeline in this country, we should be able to get fresh water to anyone that's needed. Right. We got the resources. We got the money. Let's get the water to them. So in closing, all the people that are fearing for their jobs, remember this: consent under fear and duress is considered a criminal offense. So the employers cannot do this. It's a charter of freedom rights. Exercise the authority in assaults. So the mandatory vaccine and mandatory passports were against, right? But we're for a choice of vaccine. Anytime the government says it's mandatory, you're giving up your freedom, right? So we don't want to go down that road. Look at your children, look at our grandchildren. You don't want them to get mandatory vaccines. they say vaccines, that opens it up a whole new can of worms. It could be any kind of vaccines without consent. So anyways, 250,000 men and women fought for our freedom in the war. So we're against mandatory vaccines. Vote for your children this time. Vote for your grandchildren's freedom.
Thank you, Jody. So I would personally, and on behalf of the Terrace District Chamber of Commerce and the Northwest Chambers, would like to thank all of you